Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrityam. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devam Sarasvatam Vyasam. Tato Jayamudirayat. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Narada's instruction on Srimad Bhagavatam, text number 8. Srinarda Uvacha Bhavata Nudita Prayam. Yaso Bhagavato Malam. Yenaiva Shonatusyeta. Manyeta Darshanam Kilam. Srinarda Uvacha Bhavata Nudita Prayam. Yaso Bhagavato Malam. Yenaiva Shonatusyeta. Manyeta Darshanam Kiram. Bhavata Nudita Prayam. Yaso Bhagavato Malam. Yenaiva Shonatusyeta. Manyeta Darshanam Kilam. Ladies? Bhavata Nudita Prayam. Yaso Bhagavato Malam. Yenaiva Shonatusyeta. Manyeta Darshanam Kiram. Bhavata Nudita Prayam. Yaso Bhagavato Malam. Yenaiva Shonatusyeta. Manyeta Darshanam Kedam. Srinarda. Srinarda. Uvacha. Said. Bhavata. By you. Anudita Prayam. Almost not praised. Yashaha. Glorious. Bhagavata. Of the personality of Godhead. Amalam, spotless. Yena, by which. Eva, certainly. Aso, he, the personality of Godhead. Na, does not. Tushyeta, be pleased. Manye, I think. Tat, that. Darshanam, philosophy. Kilam, inferior. Translation. Srinarda said, you have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the personality of Godhead. That philosophy which is not, does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord is considered worthless. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The eternal relation of an individual soul with the supreme soul personality of Godhead is constitutionally one of being the eternal servitor of the eternal master. The Lord has expanded himself as the living beings in order to accept loving service from them, and this alone can satisfy both the Lord and the living beings. Such a scholar as Vyasadeva has completed many expansions of the Vedic literatures, ending with the Vedanta philosophy. But none of them have been written directly glorifying the personality of Godhead. Dry philosophical speculations, even on the transcendental subject of the absolute truth, have very little attraction without directly dealing with the glorification of the Lord. The personality of Godhead is the last word in transcendental realization. The absolute, realized as impersonal Brahman, or localized supersoul, Paramatma, is less productive of transcendental bliss than the supreme personal realization of his glories. The compiler of Vedanta Darshan is Vyasadeva himself, yet he is troubled, although he is the author. So what sort of transcendental bliss can be derived by readers and listeners of Vedanta, which is not explained directly by Vyasadeva, the author? Herein lies the necessity of explaining Vedanta Sutra in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam by the selfsame author. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gnandana Sarakaya Chakshurun Militam Gena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So we're continuing the events of Narada coming to the ashram of Vyasadeva, and Vyasadeva has previously expressed, it said despondent, so I looked up despondent. Despondent means low in spirit, lack of hope. Vyasadeva, it was an odd word to use in relationship to such a person. He had taken the one Veda and understood that the age of Kali Yuga was approaching and that people wouldn't be able to understand without further explanation just by hearing the one Veda. A few weeks ago, Nagaraj gave a nice example of a whole bunch of jewels together. So what he did was he separated them, put the rubies here and the emeralds there and the diamonds over here and the other stones in different categories, so that they could be more easily distinguished and understood by categorizing the Vedas into four different categories, then teaching each disciple that particular science. Still feeling that it needed further categorization, he wrote 108 Upanishads. We're mostly familiar because Srila Prabhupada translated Sri Ishupanishad. But I'm sure if you hear the names of some of the other ones, they're familiar. Mundaka Upanishad, Gopala Tapani Upanishad, Svetasvatara Upanishad. So there are 108 Upanishads. Still feeling unfinished, he compiled 18 different Puranas. This Srimad Bhagavatam is the Bhagavat Purana. So it had not been in the list of 18. There were 17 others. Shiva Purana, Durga Purana, Matsya Purana, Varaha Purana, Skanda Purana, so many different, 18 different Puranas, some for those in the mode of ignorance, some for those in the mode of passion, and some for those in the mode of goodness. Still feeling incomplete, he compiled the Vedanta Sutra, which was kind of like a synopsis of all of them in one simple format. All that's a lot of work. That's not just a month's work or a couple of years' worth of work. That's like a lot, more than we can imagine, library big enough to write. And still, he's feeling this word, despondent. So Srila Prabhupada's first beginning of the purport zeroes in and targets the reason, and that's what Narada Muni is doing. In the previous verse, Vyasadeva, understanding, this is the relationship between the condition, between the living entity with a spiritual master. He has submitted himself, he's confused, he's despondent, despite so much work. He's still feeling unfulfilled and feeling there's something more that needs to be done. So he's asking, like the sun, your goodness can travel everywhere in the three worlds, talking to Narada, and he actually can do that. And like the air, you can penetrate the internal region of everyone. As such, you are as good as the all-pervasive supersoul. Please, therefore, find out the deficiency in me. Despite my being absorbed in transcendence under disciplinary regulations and vows. So even though he's spent so much of his life searching after the absolute truth, glorifying the Lord, serving the Lord, presenting all these different, there's something lacking. And he, that inner region is where I want to go today. You can penetrate into that inner region. So in the beginning part of the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, the eternal relation of an individual soul with the Supreme Soul, Personality of Godhead, is constitutionally one of being the eternal servitor of the eternal master. The Lord has expanded himself as the living beings in order to accept loving service from them, and this alone can satisfy both the Lord and the living beings. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, mamaivam so jiva loka, jiva bhuta sanatana, that the living entities are my eternal fragmental parts. So every fragmental part is a little spark, just like the molecular rays of the sun are part of the sun. They're connected to it by constitution. And by illuminating, they play their part. When they don't illuminate, when they're covered, when there are other influences, then their true function isn't manifest. Similarly, the free will of the living entity, if not exactly in harmony with its true nature, needs to be rectified, corrected, matured. It needs to be awakened. And there are two different analogies given to awakening that inner region, that inner consciousness of a living being. Sometimes we hear about drilling and going down in to get that jewel, like it's down in the rocks. It's way down and you need to drill. You need to get down to where the jewel is. And the other example is that it's like a seed. And the Bhakti Lata Bij verse is like that, that the spiritual master plants the seed by performing devotional activities, then that inner consciousness awakens. Both are valuable, both are analogies, how to get there, how to connect with that inner region. Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prema, Sajja Kabunoi, Shravanada Sudha Chitte, Korea Udoi, means that this Krishna Prema is lying dormant within every single little fragment of spirit. Shravanada Sudachite means by hearing from a pure source. Korea Udoi, it awakens. So what I want to do now is present an analogy of how yoga practice attempts to connect with that inner self, and how the process of bhakti does the same thing. And by understanding both of them paralleled together, we can better appreciate the steps and goal of the path of both of them. So Madan, can you put that first image up? Okay, Ashtanga Yoga means there are eight different steps to attaining the goal. The first is at the top. The first two are kind of over on the right, Yama and Niyama. This means activities that should be performed and activities that should be neglected. We have the same thing, the do's and the don'ts, what to do and what not to do. Now, for a person who's going to perform yoga, by being honest, truthful, not stealing, sense-controlled, austere, keeping good association, these activities in life prepare one to be qualified to go out to the forest. It's like preliminary activities that go out to the forest all by themselves and have enough good karma, a good piety, a good frame of mind developed so that they can perform this action. Then the third step is to find a suitable place, sit down properly, that's asana, and then begin to concentrate on the breath by performing pranayama. Now, these steps are pretty basic outward activities. But as one begins to breathe and focus on their breath, then gradually the external world becomes less distracting and influencing, and one starts to pay more and more attention to their breath. Then, pratyahara means even going more internally, into the internal regions of the self. And the outside world, the senses and their attraction to their objects, become less and less prominent in the consciousness, and the inner consciousness begins to awaken. Then dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. These are the three steps that I want to concentrate on now. When somebody in Satya Yuga was performing yoga, what was the like average time that we read about them doing it? How long do they spend engaged in yoga? How many? 60,000 years. That's a pretty popular description. So the point to take note of in that progression is that it's not that you just sit down, start focusing on your breathing, do that for a few minutes, then all of a sudden the external world disappears, and you do that for another half an hour, and then you start to head like into this meditative state, and you do that for another hour or two, and then again you go further deeper into your meditation, and finally you're just in some kind of samadhi. No. Looking up Patanjali's description of this verse. This is dharana described. Deshabhanda chittasya dharana. Concentration, dharana, is the process of holding or fixing the attention of the mind onto one object or place. Now in bhakti, the concentration, the focus, is on a person, not just a, like the flame of a candle or a dot, or some impersonal thing. It's actually the personality of Godhead. Dhyana, after that concentration becomes, another example in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that's given, is the cooking of sugarcane juice. Again, we're back to the seed. The seed grows into sugarcane. Even that takes months. Cut the sugar cane, squeeze it into juice, put it into a pot or a vat and start to cook it. You can't cook sugar cane juice fast because it'll burn. So it's a slow cook. It's a simmer and slowly cooking it down and down and down, and it becomes thicker and thicker and thicker and thicker. This is another analogy showing what happens to consciousness as a person grows, and that consciousness from within manifests, the outside world, the impurities, the loose liquids become less and less as they're cooked off. Ghee is another one. You take milk, put it in a pot and cook it. Same thing, you can't cook it fast. You have to cook it slow. And as you do, the whole thing transforms. A pot of white milk becomes yellow, golden ghee over time. And all those impurities, everybody's, I think, cooked ghee and found it, and then there's all those impurities. So dhyana, tatra pratyasa ekantate dhyanam, the repeated continuation or uninterrupted stream of that one point focus is called absorption in meditation. So as we progress through our lives, what are the symptoms? What is the experience? Otherwise, why wouldn't somebody just stop? Look, I've been sitting in this forest for such a long time. It's not working for me. I'm going to stop this already. I'm going back to the village. I'm going back to get some ice cream. Whatever. No. Something happens that's even more pleasurable that keeps the person attentive and increasingly interested in going to the next place. Otherwise, there has to be taste. What is that one in Bhagavad Gita? Vishayavani vartante nehara rasi dehina rasa varjam rasopyasya param drista nivartate. That by experiencing a higher taste, one automatically gives up the lower taste. So what is the taste that a person is experiencing when they're going through this? And then finally, samadhi. Artamatram nibhasanam swarup shunyam iva samadhi. When only the essence of that object, place or point, shines forth in the mind and is devoid of even its own form, that state of deep absorption is called deep concentration or samadhi. The other day on Gaur Purnima, we were having a nice reading about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna's desire, why he wanted to come and to manifest and take the position of Srimati Radharani and her mood. And Pushkar remembered that beautiful meditation where Mahaprabhu was in the ocean, thinking it was the Jamuna. And he became so lost in the water pastimes of the Lord that he didn't even know where he was. He had no idea. And it got caught in a fisherman's net and brought back onto the sand. And meanwhile, all the devotees were looking for him. And finally, they found the fisherman, found Mahaprabhu. His body was all elongated. They couldn't even carry him. He was in such a state. And they started to chant. Now, one might think that that was a pleasing experience for the Lord, to hear the holy name and awaken his consciousness. But when he woke up, he said, what have you done? Why have you brought me back here? I was with Krishna and the gopis on the bank in the Jamuna. They were all playing, and he came up with this and expressed this beautiful meditation that he was absorbed. So that pleasure was what grabbed him. Look at his life as an example of progressive absorption in the mood, from Nimai Pandit of Nadia to taking sannyas and traveling around South India, always wanting to go to Vrindavan and trying this and trying that. And then finally, after traveling everywhere, being in the Gambira with Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy, and every night relishing the nectar of Krishna Katha together, to the point where he would rub his face against the walls in ecstasy of love for Krishna. Or Raghunath Das Goswami, a multimillionaire, giving up everything and progressively getting to the point where he would go to the temple of Jagannath and take the discarded rice that people had thrown away because it started to decompose, wash it, and relish that. So can we have the next? These are the different stages of bhakti outlined by Rupa Goswami. So let's follow those and try to see how they equate and relate to the ones we just read. First, there's Shraddha. There's faith, some interest, Prabhupada says. Oh, what are those Hare Krishnas doing? Let me go to the temple and find out. Then by association, Sadhu Sangha, one starts to hear about the Lord and understand who he is according to this philosophy. Bhajana Kriya is generally equated with taking initiation, or at least accepting a spiritual master and following his process, his prescribed duties. By performing these duties, one becomes freed from the unwanted things, that cooking of the ghee, the impurities, anartha nivritti. The anarthas, the unwanted things, nivritti, are finished. Then one becomes steady in their practice. Now this is like the person who's doing pratyahara, and the outside world is becoming less interesting, and they're starting to head into dharana, and starting to experience something from within, and they become steady. Now what happens is that it shouldn't just plateau off, and you know, you're going on with your life, and okay, I'm steady. I have my steady sadhana, and I've got it. I'm there. I'm finished. I've reached the goal. I do this every day, and I'm satisfied. I'm good. I'm doing this every day, and I've been doing it for years, and I'm good. But that sweetness really isn't grabbing that person, pulling them along, because ruchi, the taste for it, has to also develop. Then ashakti, one becomes actually attached, because the taste is there, because there's some pleasure in doing it, the person wants to do it and then becomes attached to it. There's a difference between just being steady and having a taste for it to the point where it's so pleasurable that I want to do it. Then, as that consciousness awakens, there are different emotional experiences and physical manifestations which one experiences in that awakening of preliminary stages of love of God, that bhava, and then finally prema. Next slide. This shows those eight steps of yoga, and if you look at the bottom, you'll see that the first four are in one color, yama, niyama, asana, and pranayama, and are called external disciplines. Pratyahara, dhyana, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi are called internal disciplines. So at this point, I want to give a little bit and share a little bit of tools that I've experienced or that helped me go into these and cultivate and use and learn about and become more attentive to these internal practices. Can you finally go to that last slide, Madan? And these are the steps that would be compared with nishta, being steady, ruchi, ashakti attachment, bhava, and prema. And it applies to this part of the story or narration in Srimad Bhagavatam that we're discussing. When I was growing up as a young boy in America, playing sports, engaged in all kinds of sense gratification, watching TV, just growing up in a normal small town, Massachusetts. I didn't like school. I didn't like reading. I didn't like writing. I wanted to play. You know, I was into sports every day after school, played a team. At night, watched TV. Homework was a drag. Didn't like to read. Of course, I learned these things. But when I came across Srila Prabhupada's books, everything that I'd learned before was like a domino. Boom, it pushed the one domino. Brrr. Everything that I learned finally made sense, and I had like something that I wanted to do. I loved to read Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. I was on the Radha Damodar bus. There was 25 brahmacharis on a bus, And all day long we would hear Vishnu Janaswami singing bhajans. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj would give class in the morning, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Vishnu Jan would give class at night, Bhagavad Gita, all day long. Every single day, for months and months and months and months. And then I started doing book distribution. And in 1978, a few years after I had joined, 78, Prabhupada left in November 1977. In 1978, we went to Mayapur for the Mayapur Vrindavan Festival. And by Krishna's arrangement, I never went back to America. I stayed in Vrindavan and lived there for a couple of years, a few years. But what happened in 1980, I actually came back and forth to America a couple of times. And that was the time when ISKCON was going through its new guru stage. So I started to spend a lot more time outside of ISKCON in Vrindavan and associating with different groups that started to travel around to the 12 forests of Vrindavan, especially the Vallabhacharya Sampradaya. During Kartik, had a group of 8,000 people, most of them Gujaratis, and they had it together. There's a caste of Brahmins in Mathura called Chobais. And the Chobais arranged tents, and what they did was had two sets of tents, and they would set up the tents in one location. First stop, well, in Mathura, you don't need tents because everybody had residences at the town, a village. But we went to Madhuvan, Talavan, Kamudavan, Bahulavan, Radhakund, Govardhan, Dig, all these different places. And what would happen was that we would go to, say, Madhuvan. And they would have all the tents there, so we would walk from Mathura to Madhuvan and then go to the tents, and at night they would put on a play of the different events and pastimes that took place in that locality. The pastime of Dhruva Maharaj was Madhuvan, and also the killing of the demon Madhu, and Satyajit was there, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, there's Kunz. So then Talavan, and the Chobais had two sets of tents. They would set up the tent in Talavan while everybody was in Madhuvan. And in the morning, everybody would wake up and pick up and start to walk to Talavan. The Chobais would break down the tents and carry it ahead to Kamudavan. So, and then set it up, and everybody would walk to Talavan, watch the play, get up in the morning and travel. So as I was doing this, I was realizing, whoa. And then I had Chaitanya Charitamrita and started to follow what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had done in his, and I started to keep notes. This meant I had to write. It was like by writing, I started to journal where I was, what was going on, what pastime happened here, what are other scriptural comments on this particular place. At that time, Kushakrata Prabhu was just starting to translate his books. There weren't a whole lot of books in English. It was actually pretty challenging. The internet wasn't existent. Even personal computers weren't around quite yet. So I got a typewriter and started to keep it that way. But writing became a tool to not only keep track of stuff, different places and items and information. But it also started to help me understand my internal dialogue a lot better than I'd ever understood it. I started to connect with my inner voice, my inner self, a lot more than I had done without the tool. That's what I'm trying to bring here. That writing, think about the different acharyas. Think about Srila Prabhupada's example of writing. He was in Vrindavan after leaving his family, and he had back to Godhead, and some man told him that better you write hard books because books will last longer than magazines. So he started, 1959, translating Srimad Bhagavatam? And he got into the habit of every night, every day, he would read the different commentaries of other writers. Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, different kinds of different acharyas, comments on a verse. So he would read the verse, he would read their comment on that verse, then he would write his own purport. And Srila Prabhupada got such a taste for that activity that even when he went to the West, had all his disciples, and traveled around the world, no matter where he was, he would bring his little trunk, he would bring his little books of translations of the different commentaries, and at night, when everybody else was sleeping, Srila Prabhupada would sit and relish. He would read a verse, he would read the commentaries. Sometimes, often, he would give classes on those topics that he was writing about and studying as he traveled around the world. You can listen to the lectures. So, for us, that tool of writing, even just keeping a simple journal, will enhance the experience, especially young people, that it's a habit worth developing. Keeping a simple diary, you don't have to spend a lot of time. 5-10 minutes. Here's the first assignment. Anybody can do this and experience first very easily how valuable this is. The assignment is, write down, the goal of my life is, and I will attain it by, Narayana, you've written books. You know what this is. So many different devotees in our community have written books and shared that realization through that medium. The goal of my life is, and then write it down. It's your goal. It's not something that you need to copy from a purport or copy and paste. What is the goal? To articulate it. Articulate it so that you clearly understand it and you'll see what happens. Just what comes out of your mind the first time might not be exactly what you want to say. That's called editing. And it's editing is like refinement. You know this example of dovetail? Dovetail is a carpenter's term. I'm sure you've seen like in a drawer. Sometimes the back piece of the drawer has to link with the side pieces. And they have these kind of like mini triangles in the wood that melt together to hold the wood. That's a dovetail, because it looks a little bit like a dove's tail. Now, the thing about dovetailing is that if there's any space that isn't properly aligned, then it won't hold, it won't be tight. There's not a tight seam there. There's a hole, or it doesn't fit. It needs to be sanded and refined. So the act of editing and rewriting is like refining one's sentiments. It's taking something that you've written, just because it came out of your mind, doesn't mean that you've connected with the deeper part of your consciousness. It's the conscious part of your mind, but not the subconscious or the subliminal parts, which are where ruchi, bhava, and prema lie. So in order to get there, this tool helps to understand what that path is. And this is what Narada Muni is explaining to Vyasadeva. You did all this other stuff. You wrote about all these other activities and all these other things to write. You wrote the Mahabharata. You wrote the Vedanta Sutra. You wrote all these different Puranas. You wrote world history, universal histories. So much contemplation, but why aren't you satisfied? Because he hadn't gotten there yet in his writing. Now, what he's presented to us also gives us an indication of how we can grab that rope, just like when you're water skiing, you're behind a boat, and the boat takes off. If you're holding on to the rope, it pulls you. So by following Vyasadeva's step-by-step story, narration, verses, then what he does is he's written the book to take his reader to that place, through the 9 cantos, up to the 10th canto, and then finally, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, commentaries by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, Jiva Goswami, different acharyas about the rasa dance, Raghunath Das Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sananta Goswami, Dhan Kedi Kamudi, all these different books which explain the pastimes and fluff it out even more, then that taste and experience becomes much more palatable and experiential, not just theory or not just stories. The participant, the devotee, actually enters into those pastimes, just like Mahaprabhu and in the ocean. He was completely absorbed. The story of Shamananda. Was it Shamananda that was sweeping?
Yes.
Seva Kunj? And the bangle, Radharani? He was so absorbed that the pastimes of the transcendental world manifested in him. And he was there. So this is what will satisfy and free us from despondency. But that path isn't a quickie. It's a lifetime, at least a whole lifetime. And to follow that path and to have faith and enthusiasm and confidence in it is what we need to develop and help each other as a society to grow in that way. So the verse again. Sri Narada said, "You have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the personality of Godhead. That philosophy which does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord is considered worthless." Any comments or questions? Contradictions?
Thank you, Prabhu, for your excellent class. Prangavinda Prabhu had given some class during Gaur Purnim, and he was making the point about absorption, that we have to be absorbed. And since then, I've been absorbed in this word absorption and trying to understand what it means. And you have, in your class, very nicely, elaborately described. I guess one of the tools that you have mentioned is to write. I guess my question is, and maybe it cannot be answered because you have to experience it, but what does it look like when one is absorbed? You have expressed that. I mean, I guess I'm thinking, I want to touch it or something, that how do I do it? Or, okay, I write. Does it mean that I think about a pastime that we have heard today? You have described some, made a description, you know, expressed a pastime. Do I think about it? How do I taste that?
Because for the last few years we've been engaged, myself and Samapriya in her book, she journaled for years, just writing different poems on appearance days or processing her different experiences, taking her life as Srila Prabhupada instructed us, and then processing the events of life into different experiences and trying to write those down in a Krishna conscious manner. Her processing with poetry was really helpful. It doesn't do it for me, but it worked for her. For me, it was that different experience when I was going around in Vrindavan. Okay, you go to the place where the activity took place, read the pastimes, chant rounds, look at the place, smell the environment, listen to the birds, see the squirrels, listen to the peacocks, see the parrots. Then sit down and write what you experienced, what your meditation was while you were doing that. What happened here? You know, in our online Srimad Bhagavatam classes, I've kind of like formatted the whole study in the same way. As you go through the book, following the same process that Prabhupada did, take a purport, take a verse. Like when I was giving class, I had to give class today. So I studied this. It's like taking a snapshot of like a little segment of the book, what's going on in this relationship between Narada and Vyasadeva? What's he feeling? What's he going to be instructed? What is this in particular? What's the purport say? How does it fit into the bigger picture? And I found myself for the last few days getting ready to prepare the class, absorbed in that meditation. So that's absorption for me. That's what it is. I also increased my rounds steadily throughout life. Once I became steady at a particular level of chanting, add more rounds, become steady with that for years, 10 years, 12 years, then add another, then do that for 10 or 12 years, then add another. And in this way, try to see how a life can be one of progression and more absorption as we continue. That's like a personal sharing rather than kind of like a format, but if you just do it on a regular basis. Another example, I remember this clearly because it was profound. Some Priya, for some reason, was going to stay back here, and I went to Puri, and I was going to get the house ready, and our house was in the forest. There was no temple developed there because of government restrictions for construction, but our house had been there. So I got to Puri, and I was all by myself, and I had to do some painting during the day, but all by myself, there was nobody else around. I was basically in the forest by myself. And after a couple of weeks, I remember one night, I was sitting on our porch, and it was a coconut grove, and the stars were there, and I could hear the ocean in the distance. And all of a sudden, I just kind of awoke to me being there by myself, listening to myself, and aware of my thoughts more than I'd ever been before, because we're so distracted by everything in life. So part of it is distancing yourself. This time of life right now, with social distancing, what an opportunity to take advantage. I mean, you know, the whole world can do it. Why not take advantage and do it? Chant some extra rounds, read some more of a book, put down the phone, stop the texting, stop the interaction with so many people every single day, all day long. I remember another time, this was when Adikarta and Ruchira were living in Kentucky. They had purchased land up there, they had gone up there, and they were basically their family on the farm by themselves for a few years. And Ruchira had come back here. They were getting ready to prepare to come back. They weren't back yet. And I saw her in a Publix. I saw her at the grocery store. And I, hey, how are you? It's been a while, you know? And we were talking. And because I had experienced my aloneness, somehow or another, we connected on that. And she was saying, I know what's going to happen when I come back to Alachua. And I'm really kind of, in a way, I'm looking forward to it. And in a way, I'm regretting it because I know I'm going to get all caught up with my kids and the grandkids and the whole, everything that goes on in Alachua, because in Kentucky, she was with the cows on the farm. It was a whole other way of life for her. And I could tell that she got that. So everybody's different, but I wanted to share specifically, especially in this particular pastime, that writing, you look at our acharyas, Vyasadeva, Madhvacharya, Jiva Goswami, Rupa, Sanatan, Raghunath Das, Baladev Vidyabhusana, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta, Srila Prabhupada. They all wrote, they all used that tool in their Krishna consciousness. So I wanted to do it as the way. Thank you.
On that same point, I was thinking of, maybe this would help a little too, is text 8 of the Nectar of Instruction, because it more or less states what the goal is, the best place to be in Krishna consciousness.
Is that the essence of all advice?
That's the essence of all.
You have it there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was in the purport, but I go back. I'm not saying you're the same. But the English is, the essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, in nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, quality, and eternal pastimes, thereby gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. In this way, one should reside in Braj, the Loka Vrindavan Dham, and serve Krishna under the guidance of devotees. One should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees who are deeply attached to his devotional service. And in the purport, if I can find it, we can, it's a long purport, but it says in the neophyte stage, one should always engage in hearing Krishna Katha. This is called Shravana Dasa, state of hearing. By constantly hearing the transcendental holy name of Krishna and hearing his transcendental form, qualities, and pastimes, one can obtain to the stage of acceptance called Varnadas. When one obtains this stage, he becomes attached to hearing Krishna Gita. When one is able to chant in ecstasy, he obtains the stage of, Smarana Vastha. The state of remembering, recollection, absorption, meditation, constant remembrance, and trance are the five stages of progressive Krishna Smarana. At first, remembrance of Krishna may be interrupted at intervals, but later, remembrance proceeds uninterrupted. When remembrance is uninterrupted, it becomes concentrated and is called meditation. When meditation expands and becomes constant, it is called anusmriti. By uninterrupted and unceasing anusmriti, one enters the state of samadhi, or spiritual trance. After smaranam dasa, or samadhi, has fully developed, the soul comes to understand his original constitutional position. At that time, he can perfectly and clearly understand his eternal relationship with Krishna. This is called Sampatti Das, perfection of life.
Thank you. It's a perfect example of Gopakumar. Gopakumar, I don't know if the word despondent would be proper, but he wasn't satisfied no matter where he went. Ayodhya, Vaikuntha, Mahavishnu, you know, he went wherever he went. Dwarka, because each fragmental part, Mamayvamsa, Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta, Sanatana, each fragmental part is an eternal living entity with a swarup and a nature. And that nature, it's just like the potency of the seed has the whole tree in it. But it requires the right atmosphere to germinate and grow. And that whole Bhakti Lata example. So each one of us has an eternal nature, and this process is awakening that nature, and nothing else is going to satisfy us until we get there. Jai, Sisha Prabhu.
Confirmation of your teachings this morning. A couple of months ago, I began to take notes in the Bhagavatam class, and it's completely transformed the entire experience of attending the Bhagavatam class every day. And so it's what you described, more absorption.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Perfect. Yeah, simple thing. Huh? Paying attention, writing it down. Comfortable?
We had in Mayapur seminar, Prahladananda Maharaj, one day he was trying to train us up, the candidates, sannyas candidates, how to read. So I raised a question. I said, Maharaj, you reading one chapter of Krishna book since 45 years? And you never give up. But what is that sustain your life happy? doing such a nice service. He said Prabhupada, well, when he joined, was very, anyway, I'm thinking how to minimize the whole story. There's a lot of story he told, not necessarily for everybody. But the point was that Prabhupada says, so read this chapter, and there it says, Lord Krishna entering into the forest. Prabhupada says, stop. So what did you understand? Oh, Lord Krishna entered. No, no. You think Krishna, a person, what form he has, what color dhoti he has, what chador he has, what his face look like, and imagine a forest, and he's entering into the forest. So when you read, you can actually literally see. And Maharaj was explaining further. It was very nice. It really woke me up.
Beautiful.
And like when we read Krishna book, we should really see Krishna and the Brajadham and pastimes. But it's just reading. Problem I had, like I was mentioning in one of the class, that when Sanatan Goswami Path, generally Madan Mahaprabhu, everybody carries this little note, Ami, Ke Ami, Kene Amai, Jareta Patra, these four questions, Sanatan Goswami Path. And I was researching that, when did he ask this question and why did he ask this question? Okay, he asked in Banaras. But where was he before? He was with the Nawab Hussain Shah. What was he doing? He's studying Bhagavatam. He studies Shastra. He knows the Krishna. He knows so much philosophy. Why did he ask, Ke Ami, who am I? Why this material world is... What kind of question is that he's supposed to know everything? No, that is the symptom of humility. That when you come to another senior devotee or great personality like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, submit yourself with a blank slate. Nothing is written there. It will be filled up by Mahaprabhu. If I can come to that stage, then it is possible. Easily. Otherwise, generally I'm thinking, like I used to do that, like, oh, Dhruva Maharaj Prabhu giving class. I heard that. What he's saying, in my mind I'm thinking, I heard that. Oh, I read that. Oh, he's reading Prabhupada. Ah, it's okay. This is not a way to absorb. What is there for me to learn? There must be something Krishna is giving, Prabhupada is giving. This humble attitude, I really thought about it. Why Sanatana Goswami Pad asked those questions when he knew everything before? This blank slate is required.
Yeah, I don't want to undermine the principle of humility, but sometimes one of the benefits of education or study is you actually know how to ask the right question. So to ask, who am I, seems to be the right question, but sort of the fruit of the study there.
Interesting. Kind of, I see how both of those blend. Somebody else?
Just the point that Pran Govinda Prabhu was making, even in this particular pastime, it describes that Vyasadeva, he was despondent, and then he realized that what he hadn't done. And then Narad Muni came, and then he spoke.
Good, good connection. Yes, he did.
He did know,
And he did the same thing. Again, the assignment, the goal of my life is, and why I will attain it by, just spend a few minutes writing that down and see what it does for you. Thank you. Hare Krishna, glorious Srila Prabhupada.